even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Mind Your Loaf, a podcast about taking action on our mental health. I'm here at my co-host Mar.
Hi everybody.
Brilliant. And a team at Irish Mental Health Charity TurnToMe.ie, who besides helping us with this podcast, provide professional mental health support online free to everyone in Ireland. Anyway, look, we have Keith Walsh coming on this next episode.
Yeah, so tell us about Keith.
Yeah, I know Keith a long time. So we will talk to him about this, but I first met him on iRadio with Bernard O'Shea.
Oh, yeah.
I'd known Bernard first from doing stand-up. And so Keith was on the show with him in iRadio, which is, I'll ask Keith exactly where it was. It was kind of Drogheda area, as far as I remember. And just popped down the road when I was allowed to, down to do the iRadio show.
Back in the day.
So it was great. But yeah, we're going to talk to him now. And sure, look, I'll fill you in about him when I'm talking to him.
Okay, I look forward to that.
He's a very nice man. He's very healthy.
Oh, is he?
He's very healthy, yeah.
Okay.
And so and he's from the 2FM breakfast show that Bernard and Jennifer was on.
Yeah.
So that's where most people know Keith. Okay, Mar.
Yeah.
Mar in the wardrobe in Rateau, Jason in the kitchen in the Knoll. And now we have Keith Walsh in the office in Kildare, Keith, yes?
Yeah, the upstairs room, the office we call it. It's not much of an office, but I've dressed it so it looks really professional.
Yeah, it's very impressive.
Yeah, what we're looking at is a plant. There's a bit of a guitar.
a suggestion of baseball caps.
Yeah,
oh,
with pure metal.
Oh, with some merchandise.
Yeah, and a baseball glove. Well done, Keith.
Okay.
I love it.
Analyze that.
All sorts of shit going on. And Homebird is written behind him, which means he's never leaving ever again. So, Keith Walsh. Now, Lotties will know Keith from the breakfast show with Bernard and Jennifer. I'm just going to do a quick rewind of how I know Keith. Keith, I met you in iRadio when you were co-hosting with Bernard O'Shea. Do you remember that?
Yeah, sure do. Yeah, that was in Athlone in the Midlands. You came down to us, didn't you?
That's where it was. It was Athlone. Yes, I did come down.
One of the funniest moments, and I don't know why it sticks in my head, but you know these just random funny moments that stick in my head? The sports guy, Fran, was doing the sport in a tracksuit. He happened to be wearing a tracksuit that day, and you just went off on this thing about if you're doing the sport, you have to wear a tracksuit.
Yeah.
He was dressed for doing the sport. I just have an image of Fran just jogging in, you know.
If you're gonna do sport, you might as well be the sport. Yeah, it's a bit like people that used to go to the pub wearing their Man United tops just in case they get called up. But Keith is, I mean, you did that with Bernard and then you went on to do the breakfast show then, was it? Or did you go into Phantom then? Where did you go from then?
Yeah, so I went straight to Phantom then. Literally the only job available in Dublin once iRadio kind of finished up. And I was in Phantom for a little while and you came to work with me in Phantom. Do you remember?
Yes, we did. We had a really good show that Keith basically produced with us. He was brilliant. And I was traveling around the world and I was trying to do my radio show. We did it for about 6 months and it worked out really well, but realized that moving around a lot is not great for radio when you're trying to work for a radio station. But it was fine. It worked really well. And then you went on and you landed the amazing breakfast show with Bernard and Jennifer.
Yeah, like it's interesting kind of, it was interesting. It was great. It was some job to get, like, because when you work in radio, you never quite think you'll get that slot, that the breakfast show on 2FM, kind of, that's the, for music radio, that's the big one, you know? outside of Radio 1, getting that the Breakfast Show slot is most people. I mean, obviously, most people who work in radio are never going to work that job, you know. So to be one of the people that got to work on that show was a shock. But I think because I'd worked with Bernard before, and Bernard was coming in, and he knew Jen, and then Bernard suggested me, and so it just kind of just worked out. It was just right place, the right time, right guy. Yeah, so I was over the moon, thrilled to be doing that job, you know.
And how many years did you do that for?
Five years.
Wow. Yeah, and then with radio, because I'm in the entertainment business as well as you are, any kind of job you have in the entertainment business can just end in a day. And people don't get that.
Yeah, it's a very precarious industry. And we initially got a 2-year contract. And then I think the 2 years went well, a 3-year contract. And then we were kind of, I think that was it. But normally it's sort of, but even with the contract, Bernard or Jason, you know, even with a contract, it can end at any time. You know, they've got this clause in the contract that they can give you a month's notice or 2 months' notice. Wow. I mean, so you're always kind of on your tippy toes, and you never get comfortable. You know, you never really get your feet under the table, as it were. And like working with RTE, you hear all these stories of these great presenters that had worked for RTE in the past and how worried they were about their job. You know, it's real. Charlie. He hates 2FM. Charlie hates 2FM.
Charlie, well done.
Charlie, we're over it now. Come on.
That's brilliant. Now, we can't see Charlie, but I think that's a sound effect that Keith brought from the Breakfast Show. Yeah. Well done, Keith. Oh, yeah, you've got a lovely dog.
But that sounds like a very pressurized existence for 5 years to just be constantly on edge, or not even, as you said, not comfortable.
Yeah,
you know?
I would say in the first instance, I probably didn't believe I deserved to be there, but lots of people feel like that, you know, imposter syndrome and all that.
Yeah.
And then the pressure of, so every few months you get the Jane Lawrers, which is like getting your leaving cert.
Yeah, wow. That's the figures, the listening figures.
The listenership figures, yeah. I think the UK, they're called the radars. I can't remember what they're called in Australia. But so how many people are listening to your show? And you live and die by those, really. You know, you could be, if you got a couple of bad results in a row, you could be sacked or replaced.
Yeah, because it's all based on advertisement, isn't it? It's whoever wants to put their ad on your show. As long as it's as basic as that. Big figures, money, advertisement, and you're just in there. You're in the mix.
Yeah, it's very straightforward. It's the amount of money they can bring in, and it's based on the amount of listeners you have, how much an agency will pay to have an ad on your show. So if you've got, you know, it could be like they'll be looking for the biggest shows and the biggest listeners, and that's it. End of. You know, there's no, it's black and white, you know.
Sorry, with me is that if I was doing that right for 5 years, which because I've obviously done stand up, so I'm kind of my own boss, I go in and out of jobs, but I'm still always worried about, you know, God, am I still doing great? But if I was there for 5 years, like working like that, and then finally they end the show, did you have a feeling of, oh, thank God, actually? Because, like, it's a high pressure that's on you for 5 years. Did you have a sense of, actually, hang on a minute?
I think now, like, kind of a year and a bit, probably 2 years later, year and a half later, I'm not great with dates, but definitely now I'm looking back on, holy shit, that was crazy. Yeah. Because it was high pressure, but in the moment when it happened, I just felt, when it finished, I felt a huge sense of rejection.
Mm. Oh yeah. Yeah. But that's natural. Yeah. Because you're basically being told on paper, you're no good. We don't want you anymore. You made a big mess of it, but you're not. Because that what they do in radio and television is they have this thing in their head that they want to mix up shit after a few years. Isn't that what they do?
Yeah.
They have this thing where they go, actually, we need a change. And you fucking don't need a change. Do you know what I mean? That's what they do.
The thing about it was, like, the listenership figures were fine. We did everything we were supposed to be doing.
Yeah, these were brilliant. It's a brilliant show, it was.
It was a good show, and we were handling the pressure, and that most people, loads of stuff happened in those 5 years. Jen had two babies. Bernard lost his dad. Bernard had two children in the space of 5 years.
And he was doing the sitcom as well.
The two of them did Bridget Naaman, the sitcom, which is available to watch on Hulu. Yes. I don't know where it is.
With Pressure as well, I was in that show, which is one day, and the two of them were running from there to go and record the bloody show. It's like, it's intense.
We had 4 months where they had to film it. Like, there wasn't a huge budget, so they had to film that within 4 months. I don't know, every episode.
Jesus.
And do the breakfast show. They weren't allowed the time off because it was all RTE, you know. So they had to do the breakfast show, go and film, do the breakfast show, go and film. That was every day for about 4 months. And I was kind of then trying to hold everything together. So they'd literally turn up and respond to things, you know, but it was good. It was good.
Were you looking after yourself then, Keith, or were you spiraling into because you have to get up real early, you have to, you know, go to bed early, you have to leave your family, you can't really join in a lot of shit. Like, how were you looking after yourself?
So at that time, I thought I was looking after myself really well. I did lots of things, like I gave up sugar, I gave up caffeine, I was really kind of healthy, I was eating healthily, I thought at the time. I was training for a marathon, I was going to the gym. I wrote a list of all the things I was doing one of the years that I did the breakfast show. I trained for a marathon that I ran in Los Angeles. I was going to the gym about 2 times a week. I was playing football with a bunch of lads about maybe 2 times a week. I think I might have been hurling training at some point. My wife used to say to me, I used to lie to my wife, are you going to the gym? I said, were you in the gym today already? No. I used to lie about my activities. And then I was training for a marathon as well. I was brilliant. Like, I was, when I look back, and at the time I was going, I need to keep this going. I need to keep this going. I need to be healthy. I need to be fit. I need to be sleeping well. I need to be eating well. I need to be training. I need to keep my weight down. And blah, 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 blah. I was obviously manic.
Sounds like you were ready to burst.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was, and Keith, do you think the motivation or that kind of incessant drive, was that about you feeling strong in yourself, or that, or was it that kind of, if I stop, I will not be able to start again. If I actually stop, I'm going to know how I really am.
Yeah, probably running away from something. Like, a lot of my friends run, and sometimes I see them out running and I think, what are you running away from, you know? Some of them are just running because they enjoy running, but some of them you can see it in them. I was definitely, there was a sense as well that this is an opportunity, being on the breakfast show on 2FM. Yeah. This is an opportunity, and you're in RTE and you're not getting gigs, or you are getting television gigs, or you're being asked to do other things, you're not being asked to do other things. And all of that stuff is in your head. So you're like, am I thin enough? Am I good looking enough?
Right,
is my hair too gray? Am I speaking properly? I got my teeth straightened. I got fit. And also, like, I'm not good enough and I need to be better. And your family life suffers because everything is about the show. And a lot of that comes down to, I mean, like, people who don't work in the media industry could relate to the fact that you need this job to pay the mortgage as well. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to come home to my wife and say, well, I lost the job because I didn't do enough. And I didn't want, even for myself, I didn't want it to come to an end and think, geez, I really should have tried harder. Maybe I should have been skinnier. Maybe it was my teeth. They weren't straight enough. Maybe I should have had them whitened. Maybe all I'm only able to sort of decompartmentalize it all now.
When you think of yourself now, Keith, with this perspective of a year and a half later, and you look back at that self that was just sounds so harsh, you know, like, I'm not good, my teeth aren't straight enough, my body's not thin enough, I'm not, you know, that drive to be better, in inverted commas, better. What would you like to say to him now?
Well, I'd love to say you are good enough, but I tell him to leave.
Would you?
Leave the breakfast show?
Yeah, tell him to do something else. Or I don't know what I'd do. I still don't know what I'd say to him. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I understand your question, but I still haven't gotten to that point where I could figure out what I...
Do you have compassion for him, I suppose? Like, are you able to see...
I would have compassion for him. And I can see what he was going through. But, like, there was a lot of stuff that I hadn't dealt with kind of from my childhood as well, that kind of led to how I felt about myself. Do you know what I mean?
So there was, absolutely.
I tell you what I would have said. Do you know, actually, I know the answer. I would have said to myself, go and see a therapist now.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't wait to start therapy when this is all finished. Start now.
Yeah.
And that probably would have helped me greatly. And I probably possibly would have been the best thing I could have done, rather than all the exercise and the
Well, what it sounds like you were trying to do is you were trying to live several lives at the same time. So you're not trying to, it's not just your home life and your work life. It's your exercise life, your football life, your mate's life, your on telly life. It's like, and you can't do that. It's just too much.
No, and there was a sense of FOMO as well of, you know, if I don't do this, maybe that would be an opportunity missed or some, you know, so you're trying to do everything. Right.
Well, entertainers, like naturally, we all like, you know, we're such yes people because we think that if we don't do that thing, then it'll be, you won't be asked again. And if you don't look a certain way, you won't get on that show. Or if you're not funny enough, like it's like what Seinfeld says, he says, you're only as funny as your last breath. Which is exhausting. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, how can that be a thing? Because Seinfeld was doing a stand-up show and at the very end he does a Q&A and he does a majorly brilliant stand-up show. Then he does a couple of questions and the very last question he answers is not a funny answer. And that's where he goes, do you realise how much you have ruined this whole evening? Because the very last thing I say is what's important. And the pressure in the entertainment business, in radio, telly, stand-up plays, everything, it's nearly the last thing, the last breath. It's just too much.
And everybody has an opinion as well.
Yeah.
Like, and you like the thing about when the Breakfast Show finished, I was the face of the Breakfast Show finishing up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, what do you mean by that?
Because it wasn't like the bosses make the decision, right? But you're the person going around that has to answer the questions about why the Breakfast Show finished up.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I don't, like, here's my boss's email address. I didn't make the decision. I'm out of a job, but I'm the one for the next year, 2 years that has to answer all the questions about the job that I'm not getting paid for anymore.
Yeah, people just, I mean, I know they know it's a job, but they don't really feel it's a job because it's not a plumber. It's not a plaster. It's not a job, but it really is a fucking job. It's hard. It's like during this lockdown, I had people asking me saying, would you not do a radio slot? And I was going, what are you talking about? What do you think? I'm just going to rock into 2FM and just like push Jenny or Nikki or whoever's there and just start talking.
Just demand like the show.
So when you're gone, yeah, they're probably going, so why did you leave the show, Keith? I didn't leave the fucking show.
But they're like, they're telling me that the boss has made a mistake and like getting annoyed with me. They're like, they've messed up. They made a mess of it. They made a mess of it, Keith. And I'm like, yeah, oh, like, okay, cool. Like, but you're going through your own sort of trauma and then you have to deal with everybody else's trauma. You're like, you're trying to fix it for everybody else. And I'm like, maybe, you know, but you're also trying to be diplomatic and say, you know, these things happen. It's cool. You know, that's just show business. You know what I mean? Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. That's just the way it goes, you know? So you're explaining someone else's decision for the next year while you're also dealing with the fact that you lost a job that you like doing, you know?
And it's kind of like you're consoling other people, even though you're grieving your own loss, which can often happen.
And you're telling everybody else it's going to be all right.
It's going to be okay. And then inside yourself, I mean, I read in that article that you did in the, I think it was the Irish Times.
In the Times, yeah.
That the cancellation of the show actually just kind of triggered, it kind of brought things to a head for you. And that feeling of rejection and
yeah, so it made me, so what happened was, and I suppose maybe it comes back to my personality underneath it all. When the Breakfast Show finished up, I said, well, I don't want this to ever happen to me again.
Right.
This is me, practical me, stepping up, going, I don't want this to ever happen again. I don't want ever to have somebody in charge of me paying my mortgage, my future within, if it's the entertainment industry, if it's not or whatever, me as a person, how I feel. I don't want someone else to have that, to be able to make that decision. Look, it's a very difficult thing to do. But anyway, I said, well, I have a bit of time. Like there was a bit of sort of space where I was doing the Breakfast Show or I was doing weekends on 2FM. So I had time, I had time. So I said, well, I'm going to go to therapy and I'm going to figure out what's going on in my head. And I suppose what I was,
real quick, have you ever been to therapy before? Was this your first time?
This is my first time.
Right.
But the man in me was going, I'm going to go to a therapist because he's going to tell me how best to deal with what's going on at the moment. It was a very practical decision. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like I'm having a breakdown. It was a very kind of like my wife had mentioned to me and I went, yeah, yes. The same way as I would have about keeping fit. You know, I was, I'll go to a therapist.
He'll like a tell solution. Me.
Yeah. He'll tell me what I need to do now to make sure I don't have a breakdown right now because I feel like I'm falling apart.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it was a very practical decision. But I suppose, and I was ready, I was there, I turned up at the therapist ready to work, you know, I was ready to be honest, I was ready to talk about everything, and I was open, and we got through a lot of work very quickly. And what I sort of quickly realized was that, I mean, yes, I did have a lot of, you know, I was affected hugely by the loss of this job. And almost like to me, it was some sort of public humiliation. Then going back to my childhood and my upbringing, that was very important in how I dealt with things generally. So that had to change as well, you know? So we just, we got into all that. We got into everything. We, you know, nothing was left, no stone was left unturned.
Yeah.
And it was hugely, hugely beneficial. Like it literally has changed my life, you know?
How were you able to reframe, or did you learn how to reframe that, the kind of humiliation that you felt? And you said that comes from like childhood stuff. How were you able to look at that differently? Or have you been able to say that it's not humiliating, or it is humiliating, but that's because of how I was
thinking about
myself?
There's a couple of things going on, because at the same time you're going, this is a very practical decision by the boss to do this, to make a change. And I can see it. I'm getting old. It's 2FM. It's a youth station. They probably need to bring in someone younger, etc. You can see that from a practical point of view, but yet you feel a terrible sense of rejection, like you're not good enough. And not only does 2FM not want you, but Rorty probably don't want you. And you know what? The entertainment industry in general doesn't want you. So you you gave it a go. You had a good run at it. Fair play to you. But thanks very much. Okay.
Yeah.
That's how you feel.
Were you taught that you weren't a failure? Like in therapy, was that like basically saying, look, listen, you're not a failure. You weren't at all. If anything, you were a fucking success, because that was an amazing show.
Yeah. And also what I was basing success on was wrong. I was coming at it from the wrong place. And a lot of, like, you know, I suppose I was brought up in a way that, and we all were brought up in a way that your job defines you as a man. Right. You need your job, your success, the money you bring in is your success. The car you drive is your success. The type of house you have is your success. And you need a house, you need a car, and you need some money and all that, but that's not the success. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was being able to see what the success was. And while I was so busy, you know, trying to make sure that this breakfast show happened, I was rejecting, I was neglecting the things that were my success, like my family and my wife and my kids and myself, you know? And as you said, like even to get this job in the first place was a success, and I should have given myself a bit more credit for that, you know? So it was hugely successful to do, but I couldn't see that. And I also felt that it probably only happened by accident. They probably meant to get someone else. They probably wanted to get Jason, but he wasn't available. And they went down the list. Dermot Whelan, not available.
No way.
Kevin McGahern doesn't know how to run a desk in the radio.
Yeah.
He can do it. So he'll do. So all those things. But like I grew up in my childhood, it was a very sort of violent, like, I mean, I think a lot of houses in Ireland were like one of the things that pissed me off is the, you know, these Irish mammy jokes where the wooden spoon and all that. It's like, you know, there was a lot of domestic violence growing up in Ireland, a lot of it, you know, it's for me, it's like, it's the next thing we need to talk about, because there's a lot of, especially men or women are generally better at talking about things, but men who had weird relationships, especially with mothers. Mothers were very violent. And I'm not talking about the odd smack, you know, I'm talking about taking it to the next level, you know?
Yeah.
So that...
Which again is very humiliating, Keith, isn't it? Yeah, as a child to experience that and the unexpectedness of it as well, just that...
Because you're also wondering what you've done wrong to deserve such a punishment.
Yeah, but also it's the person that you love the most.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And domestic violence, we always think of husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, boyfriend, boyfriend, girlfriend, girlfriend. But parent, child.
Yeah.
Like that's the hardest thing to get your head around. It's so confusing, you know?
It is.
So what you do is you guard yourself. You create this, it's kind of like a shell. So you put all your emotions way down inside the shell inside you. They're still there, but you don't access them really.
Yeah.
So you keep yourself on an even keel. So you stop, you end up over the years not being able to easily access emotions that you need to deal with certain things. Yeah. And I'd gotten to a point in my life in my 20s where I'd say things were grand. Everything was grand. Yeah. Like people had asked me about the breakfast show. How's the job going? Grand. And I'd make joy. Oh, well, I haven't been fired yet. Everything was grand. My home life was grand. I was grand. Everything was grand. Nothing. I never had those moments where everything was brilliant. You know what I mean? The only time I'd get that would be after a few drinks or.
And you know what was a really sad thing was that when you seen your children playing with your wife, you were on the outside looking in. Like you just couldn't join in there. I mean, was that the work or was that your childhood past or what makes you
that
feel
was
like
me.
That?
That was me as a person. That was me going, why am I not having the crack with my family who I love? And they're clearly like they'd be in the kitchen just laughing and, you know, messing. And I couldn't get involved. I couldn't relax.
Engage.
I couldn't engage. I didn't have it. You know, I wasn't, I'd fake it. Or I'd have a few beers and then it'd be grand, you know. But yeah, it was just what I did with Luke, my therapist, was I worked at being vulnerable first of all. Mm-hmm. So being vulnerable and being honest about how I was feeling and what was going on, and the vulnerability helped me to unblock everything and unpack stuff, you know. So I started unpacking all these things, like stories that I had about myself and who I was and all that kind of stuff. And as I unpacked it, things started to move and change. And I started, like, it was kind of like I've described it before, like almost coming up from underwater, you know, and you kind of start seeing things very clearly. It's a strange thing. It's a strange feeling. It's strange. The one thing I would say for anybody thinking about therapy as well, therapy is great, but it's strange for the people around you because you start behaving differently and you start... Yeah. being different, and your wife is looking at you going, you're not like, I thought you were the strong silent type. Now you're crying.
Why? Yeah, what are you crying at? Because the bread's open. Why are you crying?
Now you used to never talk. Now you won't shut the fuck up, you know?
But you know what you said there, which is really good, because I felt the same when I went to therapy, because I was the type of attitude, you know, the type of personality that you are, which is like the strong fella, the happy fella, to keep everybody going. But when I went to therapy, I did exactly what you did, which is unpacking everything. So men that are listening right now, we tend to, get the suitcase and press it down and sit on it and try and lock it that way. But Jesus, when you go to therapy, doesn't it just all fling open? And you're going, look, there's the socks. Oh, my God, there's the aftershave. Jesus Christ, there's that. And you're just out.
There's a bit in my play where I talk about the stories and I have this sort of analogy where it's like I was the old guy and the American TV crew were coming to my house to I'd hoarded all the shit in my house, you know, like it was like hoarders from hell, right? I was the old guy.
Can't even get in the door.
I was the old guy with all these newspapers in the sitting room, right? This American TV crew are coming going, what the hell is this? And I'm like, leave that alone. That's a perfectly good memory of the time I punched my friend Roland in the face and I kept punching him until he bled. And I need that story for when it's 4 o'clock in the morning and I want to feel bad about myself. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And they're trying to put the stories into the skip. Do you know what I mean?
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And you know, Keith and Jason, just to come back, because I just think it's an important thing. You know that thing when there's, say, violence or any type of mistreatment of us when we're children by our caregivers or whatever it is, that the child is programmed to believe that the adult, and especially their primary caregiver, is good, that they are the gods of our life, you know.
Totally, yeah, totally. There's a moment, and it's in the play, so I don't mind talking about it.
Oh yeah, just say that the play is a play that you wrote after you left.
Yeah, so it's called Pure Mental, and it's a play about, you know, losing a man in his 40s, losing the job he loves and how he deals with it, basically. And it's an everyman story, but it's about me, you know. And there's a moment in it, my mother at one point, she put tape over my mouth.
Yeah.
And I remember saying and this is going back to what you're saying, Marion. I remember talking to Luke, my therapist, and saying, you know, telling him this story and kind of going, isn't it gas that she did that, right? She put tape over my mouth, but I ended up being on radio. Isn't that gas, right. You know? Yeah. And he was like, it's ironic, isn't it? And he was going, you're looking at it from the wrong way. It's like, you did that anyway. This thing happened to you. It's a coincidence. You need to think about what maybe you could have done if you didn't have to deal with that shit when you were young.
Yeah.
Like you possibly were destined to be a presenter anyway, or to get into the entertainment industry. Everything's kicking off down here. Let me just close the door. Hang on a second.
Yeah, no problem.
It's all right.
You're probably destined to do whatever you're going to do. This thing happening, I felt this moment in my life, the tape of my, you know, and me being on radio, that was like mad, you know, connection, like, you know, like almost like if my mother hadn't done that, I wouldn't, you know, almost like crediting her with,
right, yeah,
with being,
but isn't that it's got absolutely nothing to fucking do with it, isn't it? Just crazy.
But nothing, but in my head I was like, yeah, that's, and almost giving her the credit for, because there's something she would have said a lot, is like, well, like I made them very independent right. People like we all kind of left home at 18. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, a lot of us did in that era. All of us did.
We did, yeah, I suppose.
We couldn't wait. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I remember doing that in my stand-up, saying like, everybody be singing happy birthday to you on your 18th birthday, and you'd have a rucksack on your back. Going, happy birthday to you. Thanks very much. See us, get the fuck out of here. Mother of Jesus. And now we love our children so much they won't fuck off at all.
But it's better, isn't it? It's better because I guarantee you, as you said, like that's like for my mother, and there's also a bit in the play where I talk about, like, I look at her and I'm going, shit, like that's trauma passed on from trauma passed
yeah,
on from
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Ireland is a very traumatized country, and we're only getting the moment now. This is the generation where we try and deal with that shit, you know? And
yeah.
That's what's happening. But like, I looked at my mother and like, how the hell did she end up in a house with five children in the Midlands, far from Kilkenny where she grew up, and like not doing probably what she would have liked to have done as a child, and having to leave school after sixth class and all this kind of stuff. And you're going, I see it. Like, this is not about demonizing anybody.
No, absolutely not.
This is about trying to figure out what's going on and why it's going on and what's going on for everybody and everybody's story. And it's difficult because all you're doing is trying to untangle it.
Yeah.
Not pointing the finger.
Yeah, they always say the anger is coming from somewhere else. That's a lot of time they say that. I remember a blind boy saying that to me when I did a podcast. I was talking about my mum, and we do say it kind of fun, when she was like slapping it with the slipper or whatever. And then he goes, that's not because she's angry with you. She's angry with probably something else in her life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, we were the brunt of the frustration, you know, it was taken out on us, you know, and it doesn't make it right, but it makes it easier to understand and better, you know, to understand, you know.
Just to say what that point for a second, but like, we're not blaming, you know, we understand the parent, but then also to kind of realize where our beliefs about ourselves have come from, and that they're not automatically correct just because they're a belief.
Totally. And it's like looking at your stories, the stories that you've told yourself about yourself, and looking at them. And for me, it was writing them down and then being able to look at them and go, that doesn't make sense. Do you know what I mean? Getting outside your own head, you know?
Yeah.
So did you feel that the play helped you mentally? You know,
it was definitely part, like, like Luke got me writing. So I was writing short stories, and a lot of the stuff that was coming up was about stuff that happened in my childhood, about young lads that I knew that died, or about my mother, or about this or about that. And I just ended up with a bunch of short stories that I sent to a friend of mine. And she said, look, I think there's a play in this. If you want to work together, we can do something. And that's kind of what happened. But definitely, oh yeah, the process of the writing helped me. And doing it on stage. Now, it didn't help my mother, but
she's still around, isn't
she? Yeah,
your mother?
Yeah, she's still alive. Yeah, so I did. I mean,
did she see it? Has she seen the play?
I performed half of it. I sent her the script, so I performed a work in progress, which is basically half the play online during lockdown because we were due to perform it for the June Fest in Newbridge, but then COVID hit. So I did. I sent her the script, and I said, look, this is happening, so I just want to let you know. I didn't send it to her, say like, just cross out the bits you don't like. It was just out of courtesy.
You weren't asking her, you were telling her. Yeah,
exactly.
And Keith, you I read, you know, you were saying you felt you didn't fully know how to be yourself as a young lad, and possibly up until very recently.
Yeah.
Do you feel able to be yourself now, and what's that like?
Yeah, I'm starting to feel like who I am, and that's the weird. Okay, so that's the clarity you feel with therapy. You start feeling like you might be mad,
mm-hmm.
And other people think that people are saying things to you that make you think that you might be mad, but you're just you start thinking differently. Like you have these moments of clarity where you can actually see yourself.
Yes.
You really are without anything. And that's kind of almost like unsettling and disconcerting, mm-hmm. but that becomes normal. And then your wife gets used to the new you, and then your children sort of, and then you sort of start, you know,
who's that man?
Yeah. Like, she was like, I got a divorce, but now I'm living with you.
I mean, I often leave therapy, I don't know if you do, with like some nuggets, and you're kind of going, oh yeah. Cause I basically learned from therapy that I can't control everything. Mm. It was literally like, and that's what calmed me down 70%.
Yeah.
I was like, what? And because I think, Mara, is it called omnipotent or something like that? That's the word I think they used, saying like it's godlike, trying to control everybody else and other careers and other things. Yeah. And because that comes from my childhood, trying to control my parents, trying to think that I could actually sort this relationship out, and I kept doing that in school and everywhere to control, until eventually I just had to go. I mean, my marriage broke down, whatever, that was for loads of other different reasons, but I basically went to therapy and was told just stop trying to control everything, and that's what my nugget. I don't know if you got that kind of a nugget from your therapy.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, probably that's why I was behaving the way I was behaving, because I felt like I needed to. Well, I needed everyone to like me. And that was my problem, my big one. But control is a big thing. And when you realize you can't control things, it takes the pressure off, and you just allow yourself to be. It's also not, and I know this is a cliche, but not caring what people think. I would have really cared about what people thought about me, and I would have wanted everyone to like me, which is impossible. So now what I do is I kind of just do what I want to do, but I'm not irresponsible. Like, I bring in enough money to pay the mortgage. Yeah. I make sure I do things in a way that I'm responsible about it. I didn't just say to Suzanne, look, I'm going to live down the shed now. Best of luck to you. I'll be up for the ride every now and then.
Not a controlling ride, like whatever happens.
You won't know. You won't know
would you wear your tracksuit when you're going for the ride?
Just the top. Just the top.
But Keith,
it's about letting go of control, but also being realistic about it and managing your life in a different way, and trying to, like, you can't just decide I'm only doing things my way from now on. You know, it's got to be an informed decision. Well, I want to spend most of my time at home now, you know, so how do I do that? How can I also make money? How can I also pay the bills? I can't just turn around to Suzanne and go, look, I've done my time. I've done 20 years of working.
Yeah.
Best of luck to you now.
I read, there's a lovely quote that says, you know, the decisions that we make when we love ourselves are always good. Mm. And that thing of when we are being driven by a need to be liked or we're driven by a need to control, at some level, I think that's coming from a place where we don't like ourselves or we don't know ourselves, we don't accept ourselves. But when we do, I think naturally we will be orientated towards the good decision for us and our context and our life.
Yeah, like it's, you know, you start getting into what some people might refer, you know, people might think it's kind of wanky talk, but, and I don't know how you want to dress it up, but with the clarity comes being aware of the universe and, you know, how that actually works, you know, yeah. And it goes back to what you're saying, Jason, about controlling everything. You can't control everything. Things just happen and bad things happen and life can be just arbitrary. I was obsessed with them, all these kids that died when I was young. And I was like, you know, that was really, really sort of, you know, like kids I knew, like a kid in my, in school just died in my arms. Like had a massive heart attack. I learned later.
In primary school or what?
Yeah. Secondary school, like second year in secondary school. And we were playing football in the yard before school and he literally dropped. And I thought he fell. So I was picking him up. And I remember I was kneeling there and my knees were wet and he just breathed his last in my arms. Right? But so this comes back to honesty and vulnerability and how you deal with stuff in the moment. So the brothers came, you know, the brothers come out, clear the yard, everybody back into class, nothing to see here. I remember sitting in the class doing fractions when I heard the sirens, right?
Jesus Christ.
And that was it.
Like, why send a child back into fucking class after that? It's crazy.
But this kid had died.
And I mean you.
Oh, yeah, I know. Exactly. This kid had died in my arms and I was just sitting in class doing fractions. And then I didn't even feel like I could tell my parents how mad it felt and how, because then you would just feel, you'd be feeling sorry for yourself or looking for attention.
Yeah.
And will you shut up? Like, it wasn't you that died. Aren't you still alive?
What you needed there, Keith, was like an adult to validate your experience. Yeah, so there was
that's all.
Yeah, but in those days, our parents didn't have the tools to talk to a child about that. So my dad would have done the exact same thing. He would have went, sure, look, it's done now. Sure, come on, move on now. Sure, anyway,
dwelling on it. But like,
it's because he didn't know how to sit down and talk to me about a child dying in my arms. That's what they do. That's how shit they were like that. But it wasn't their fault.
No, but the thing I've learned is that, like, even with my own kids now, is just to talk, genuinely, honestly talk. And you don't have to fix it. Just listen, be there, sit beside them, let them say what they have to say.
Do you know that what you just said there, just being there is good enough. When they know that you're there and it's safe and you're around them all the time. As you said, you don't have to talk to them all the time. They just like, because I've got a 20-year-old and a 13-year-old, they don't like to do loads and loads of talking, but they do love to know I'm around them.
Yeah, and it's about access to conversation, that they know that you are there if they do need to talk. And as you said, Keith, it's about listening. Very often.
These like traumas, like things like that only become traumas is if someone doesn't validate them, and someone doesn't tell you. Yeah. Like, you know, for someone, it can be like being age of age and turning around in the corner and a massive dog barking at them. And that can be the incident, right? But if they don't get to deal with how they felt in that moment with somebody who listened to them, if they can't talk about that, that can become a big problem, you know?
But it becomes stored in us, doesn't it?
Like, yeah, so it's only ever about, like, bad things happen. People die. Life is arbitrary. Shit happens. But it's about learning. It's when these things aren't dealt with in the proper way. That's all it is, you know?
So, Keith, all the stuff you've been through, like your childhood stuff, the breakfast show, I mean, a lot of people would only have a snippet of that kind of mental kind of pressure, but you've had the whole thing on you. You've been through therapy. And now, I mean, are you out the other side or are you still just repairing yourself? Like, are you still just getting there? And what are you going to do now? That's what most people listen would love to know.
I'm just going to do Zoom calls.
Well, I'm doing gigs in my toilet, so and I don't give a shit anymore.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do, and I don't want to say I don't care.
Just to answer your first. you know?
Yeah, so the play was supposed to be touring November, December. That's all been put on pause. So that will happen next year. There's a 20-day tour book for next year. So they have that to look forward to. And I'm interested in performing. And I studied acting in college and all that kind of stuff. So I'll do that.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Let's just do shit and see how it goes. You know, yeah. Anything is possible. Like, and I'm not kind of going to say the universe is good and the universe will catch it.
Yeah. But you just have to be able to accept change, I think.
Yeah.
It's a bit like with me as well, because all my gigs are gone, everything's gone. But my change was, you know, I started doing gigs in the toilet here and making little sketches and you know, doing other little bits. But I think that what I'd say to loads of people who are even not in the entertainment business is don't panic. You know what I mean? Don't panic. Just accept what's happening and then just see what you can do. Let's see how you can change, you know?
Yeah, be open, stay open, you know, see doors as they open, like, you know,
yeah.
It's about not having tunnel vision and not seeing only one thing. Like, you know, it's like somebody said to me the other day, like, you might get to the top of the ladder and realize it was leaning against the wrong wall.
Yeah. It's true, though, isn't it?
Which is horrible in one way, but also so reassuring that this kind of thing happens. But also I'm doing a podcast, which I'd like to mention, which is simply called the Keith Walsh Podcast. And I get to talk to people and you know, from working on radio, Jason, that your commercial radio can be very too structured almost. You know, you're always selling the ads. You're always talking with the sponsor. You're always talking about the next song. You're always talking about this. So with the podcast, I get to talk to somebody as you do, you know, for an hour and a half, whatever, about, you know, real things we're actually just interested in talking about, like this, I suppose.
Yeah.
So that's something that I'm doing as well. And I'm putting out like 3 podcasts a week or something because I can, and because I have the time, and it's like, let's just give this a lash for a while. So, and you don't know where that might lead. It might lead nowhere, but I'm enjoying it. And that's the main thing. And it's keeping me busy.
And can I ask you about journaling, Keith? How long do you spend journaling per day?
I usually try and do three. This is very I try and do 3 pages, foolscap pages.
Okay.
And wow. It's not something I'll ever. I don't journal like to do. It's not a to do list. It's not
right. Is it like a stream of consciousness?
It's just like, and I don't ever read it back. No one's ever going to see it. I don't even worry about grammar. I don't worry about
penmanship.
It's just I wouldn't, if I read it back, I wouldn't even know what I was talking about.
Okay, so it's just release,
Yeah, it's all the stuff that's in my head, the people I want to have around with, the people, you know, it's just like,
good.
Or it might be like, oh, it's raining again, but, you know, whatever. It could be just
whatever.
Noticing things.
Whatever. And again, that's practicing letting go as well, isn't it? That kind of letting go of structure, letting go of a narrative. You just...
And the freedom of it is that you're not going to show this to anybody. You're not even going to read it back. You're just, and you know, you don't even have to worry about spelling or anything. It's just stream of consciousness.
It's kind of like you're just unpacking constantly every morning. Stuff.
I'm actually writing On the Road by Jack Kerouac.
And the one thing as well, people are listening to therapy, and when you go to, like Keith does, you're still good crack at the end, Keith. Isn't that right? I mean, like, you don't lose the crack. I've heard people going, so are you any crack anymore?
Yeah, because I gave up drink as well. And that's
you're no crack. You're fucking useless. That therapy shite. What are you doing, Keith? Oh, here. No drinking. There's something wrong with him.
But I don't, like, it wasn't even a thing. I didn't even decide. It was just like that feeling I got from drinking. I had that most days. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
So what I was drinking for, I didn't need, because I was having that. I wasn't feeling.
You're
like
giving
shit.
The booze the credit for the crack you were having.
Yeah, I it'd be Friday and someone would be having a drink and I'd be like, no, I just don't feel like it. Just don't need it anymore. Yeah, so I'm no crack.
You're comfortable in your own skin now, I think. But
totally.
It sounds,
yeah, totally. I feel like I'm a different person. I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like I feel so. Yeah, I mean, almost horizontal, you know, and
sound like you've discovered basically yourself. You found out who's in there, and there he is. Should have been.
I think so, and I think I was always there, but I've become happy with who I am.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
Like I'm very more. I'm still aware of who I am and the things I like and don't like about myself. But I like more. I just like myself, and I haven't really changed that much. But I just, yeah.
Well, Keith, we've been talking now so long, but that was brilliant. Thanks for doing that. And the great thing is that people listening, Keith is still a men's crack. He has actually turned up to this podcast in a tracksuit top. So
it's a tribute. A tribute to Fran reading the news in Athlone all those years ago.
I mean, you're a brilliant fella. I know you a long time, and I've always had great fun working with you. And the great thing is that as well, from knowing you and working with you, and a lot of people out there listening, you never realise what people are going through.
Yeah,
I mean, I had no
true.
Idea of your childhood past, of how fast you were working during the breakfast. I mean, I would see you now and again with the Breakfast Club. I go, oh, there's Keith. There looks happy enough there, Bernard, and all that's grand. So we don't know. You know what I mean?
No,
so
no.
Definitely give people room to maybe talk to you and say what they need to say.
Totally. And try and meet people where they're at, you know, try and give people the benefit of the doubt. And they didn't actually mean to snap at you that day. They're just, you know, having a bad day, or, you know, or if they seem really happy all the time, don't believe that shit either, man. That's not true.
And how's Bernard? I have to go. I have to give him a ring.
Well, he's bringing out a book. I think he's got a book out. I remember he once said to me, he said, when your agent comes in and said, do you want to write a book? You know, your career is over. And he's written two. he's on his second book now. So.
Keith Walsh is a bollocks. Jennifer the bitch. Well, look, Keith, thanks a million for sharing all that.
Yeah, no,
thanks very much, Keith. That was really enjoyable.
Thanks to you, Jason, as well. Thanks, Marion. And thanks for everything, Jason. And you've always been very nice to me. So thank you very much. And best of luck with
it. I try my best, Keith. And you're a great crack.
Absolutely.
Well, look, thanks for listening.
On that note, thanks, everybody.
Another episode of Mind Your Loaf. My God, people's loaves must have been getting repaired everywhere because of us now.
I hope so.
We're like Brennans. Okay.
Well, listen, Jason, mind yourself, mind your loaf, and we'll see you next time.
Yes, indeed. We'll talk to you all soon. Thanks a million, Mark.
Bye.
Turn to Me provides professional mental health support.
Jason, do your, your ad voice.
Oh, yeah, I'll do the ad. Yeah, okay, I'll do a proper ad thing. Okay, ready? Yeah. As a registered charity, Turn to Me provides professional mental health support online for anyone in Ireland going through a tough time. From one-to-one counselling to group and peer support, Turn to Me is accessible from any device anywhere in Ireland. If you would like to support Turn to Me, you can donate €4 by texting Turn to Me to 50300. Text costs €4. Turn to Me will receive a minimum of €3.60. Service provider like charity. Helpline 07 6 680 5278.
Is that you?
Yeah, that was actually me. Okay. There.